Have you ever looked at a map of the United States, coast to coast, and thought about crossing it in one hop? No fuel stops, no rest, just you and the airplane and 2,700 miles of whatever the country decides to throw at you. I'm Taildragger, and this is The Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair, because today's story is about two Army Air Service lieutenants who did exactly that, and it almost didn't work. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. So let's set the scene. It is the early 1920s, the Great War is over. Aviation is still a barnstormer's game to most Americans. You land in a farmer's field, you charge folks a dollar a ride, and if you're lucky, the engine holds together long enough to get you to the next county fair. But inside the Army Air Service, a handful of pilots are looking at something bigger. They want to prove that an airplane can cross the entire continental United States without stopping. Coast to coast, one tank of gas, one flight. Now, people had crossed the country by air before. Cal Rogers did it back in 1911 in a Wright Model EX. He called the VinFizz, but that took him 49 days and something like 70 stops. He crashed so many times they practically rebuilt the airplane in mid-journey. What Kelly and MacCready wanted to do was fundamentally different. They wanted to take off, point the nose at the other coast, and not touch the ground again until they got there. The airplane they chose was a Fokker T-2 now. This was not some sleek racing machine. The T-2 was a big, slab-sided, high-wing monoplane originally designed as a transport in the Netherlands. It had a single Liberty 12-cylinder engine up front cranking out about 400 horsepower. The Army bought it and then modified it heavily for the record attempt. They added fuel tanks. Lots of fuel tanks. By the time they were done, that airplane could carry something like 735 gallons of gasoline. The whole airframe was basically a flying fuel depot with two seats bolted on as an afterthought. And here's the thing about the T-2 that most people don't realize. The cockpit arrangement was unusual. There were actually two crew positions. One was an open cockpit up top in the normal spot behind the engine, and the other was an enclosed cabin buried inside the fuselage behind the wing. The two pilots could switch off during the flight, crawling between positions, one flying while the other rested or tried to rest. Imagine trying to sleep inside a wooden fuselage with a Liberty engine shaking every rivet in the airplane 3 feet from your head. Lieutenant Oakley Kelly and Lieutenant John MacCready were the crew. Kelly was a skilled pilot who had already set an endurance record. MacCready was famous in his own right. He was a test pilot and high-altitude specialist who had taken an airplane above 40,000 feet, which in the early 20s was an almost incomprehensible altitude. The man had been so high he needed a special oxygen apparatus just to stay conscious. These were not amateurs, these were two of the best pilots the Army Air Service had. Their first attempts went east to west. The logic made sense. Take off from Roosevelt Field on Long Island, ride the prevailing winds, and land in San Diego at Rockwell Field. They tried it in October of 1922 and got as far as Indianapolis before engine trouble forced them down. They tried again in November and made it all the way to western Indiana before fog and low ceilings shut them down. They simply could not see the terrain ahead, and the T-2 loaded to the gills with fuel was not an airplane you wanted to fly into a hillside. Now, here's where it gets interesting. After those two failures, Kelly and MacCready did something that went against the conventional wisdom. They decided to reverse the route. Instead of flying east to west with the prevailing winds at their back, they would fly west to east, taking off from San Diego and landing in New York. The reason was practical and brilliant. The critical part of the flight was the beginning, when the airplane was heaviest. Fully loaded, the T-2 weighed over 10,800 pounds. It could barely climb, and the route from New York heading west meant they had to clear the Appalachian Mountains early on while the airplane was still a wallowing pig. But flying east from San Diego, the first major terrain obstacle, the Rockies, would come later in the flight after they had burned off hundreds of gallons of fuel, and the airplane was lighter and could actually climb. So on May 2, 1923, just after noon Pacific time, Kelly and MacCready lined up on the dirt runway at Rockwell Field in San Diego. That airplane was so heavy with fuel that the takeoff roll was agonizing. Witnesses said the T-2 used nearly every foot of available runway and staggered into the air like it wasn't entirely sure it wanted to be there. They barely cleared the boundary fence, and then they turned east into the afternoon sun, into the desert, into whatever America had in store for them. The first hours were a grind. The T-2 cruised at maybe 90 to 100 miles an hour. That's it. 90 miles an hour over the desert floor, the engine hammering away, the fuel slowly burning off. They crossed the Imperial Valley. They crossed Arizona. As the sun went down, they were somewhere over New Mexico, flying into the darkness, navigating by whatever landmarks they could see in the moonlight and by dead reckoning. No radio navigation, no GPS, no moving map. Just a compass, a clock, and a set of sectional charts that were, by today's standards, barely better than roadmaps. They flew through the night, one pilot in the open cockpit fighting the cold, keeping the wings level. The other crammed into the fuselage cabin, trying to sleep on a fuel tank. They switched off periodically, crawling past each other in the cramped interior. Every hour that passed meant less fuel, which meant the airplane flew a little better, climbed a little easier. But every hour also meant more fatigue, more cold, more vibration rattling their bones. By dawn on May 3rd, they were over the Midwest. The sun came up behind them and they could see the farmland of Indiana unrolling ahead. They had already been in the air for nearly 20 hours. The engine, that big Liberty 12, just kept turning. 400 horsepower, hour after hour after hour, with no hiccup, no sputter, no oil pressure drop. Say what you want about Liberty engines on that day, theirs was a champion. They crossed Indiana, they crossed Ohio, they crossed Pennsylvania, and now the endpoint was in sight. They were going to make it, but they were not heading for Long Island this time. Their planned destination was Rockwell Field's counterpart, but weather and fuel calculations pushed them toward a landing at Roosevelt Field, back on Long Island. They crossed into New York State and began their descent toward Long Island in the late afternoon. At 12:35 in the afternoon Eastern Time on May 3, 1923, the Fokker T-2 touched down at Roosevelt Field. Kelly and MacCready had been in the air for 26 hours and 50 minutes. They had covered approximately 2,700 miles, nonstop, coast to coast. For the first time in the history of aviation, think about that for a second, 26 hours and 50 minutes in an open cockpit, single-engine airplane with no autopilot, no pressurization, no heater worth the name, navigating by dead reckoning through the night, over terrain that would kill them if the engine quit. And they just did it. They just ground it out, mile after mile, hour after hour. The achievement was enormous. The press went wild. Kelly and MacCready were awarded the MacKay Trophy for the most meritorious flight of the year. They became household names, at least for a while, the way aviators did in that golden era, before the public's attention moved on to the next daring fool in a flying machine. But what they proved mattered more than the headlines. They proved that an airplane could reliably cover the breadth of the United States in a single flight. They proved that air transportation across the continent was not a fantasy. They cracked the door open for everything that came after, the airmail routes, the airline routes, the idea that you could get on an airplane in California and get off in New York without stopping. And it's worth remembering that when Charles Lindbergh flew the Atlantic just 4 years later in 1927, he was flying a similar distance. Lindbergh's flight from New York to Paris was about 3,600 miles. Kelly and MacCready covered 2,700. The Atlantic crossing gets all the glory, and rightly so, because there was an ocean underneath and nowhere to put down. But the transcontinental nonstop was the proof of concept. It showed that a well-prepared crew in a properly equipped airplane could fly that kind of distance and survive. What happened to them afterward? MacCready stayed in the Army Air Corps and became one of the pioneers of high-altitude flight research. He contributed to the development of pressure suits and oxygen systems that would eventually make the stratosphere accessible. Kelly continued as a military aviator and later became involved in aviation administration. Neither man became as famous as Lindbergh or Earhart. History has a way of remembering the names that come with the biggest headlines and forgetting the ones who laid the groundwork. But that Fokker T-2 survived. You can see it today. It hangs in the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., right there with the Wright Flyer and the Spirit of St. Louis. If you ever get the chance to stand underneath it, look up at that big wooden wing and that massive engine and try to imagine sitting behind it for 27 hours, crossing a continent in the dark, with nothing but a compass and your nerve. May 3, 1923, Kelly and MacCready, the first nonstop transcontinental flight across the United States, one of those achievements that changed what people believed an airplane could do. This one drew from the Smithsonian's records on the Fokker T-2 and several accounts of the 1922 and 23 attempts compiled by aviation historians over the years. More stories like this every week at radiohangar.com. Fly safe out there.